Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 24, 10th canto. This is actually from the Krishna book, Srimad Bhagavatam. You're going to hear about Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. Giridhari ki jai. While engaged with the Brahmanas who were too much involved in the performance of Vedic sacrifices, Krishna and Balaram also saw that the cowherd men were preparing a similar sacrifice in order to pacify Indra, the king of heaven, who was responsible for supplying water. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a devotee of Krishna has strong and firm faith in the understanding that if he is simply engaged in Krishna consciousness and Krishna's transcendental loving service, he is free from all other obligations. A pure devotee of Lord Krishna doesn't have to perform any of the ritualistic functions enjoined in the Vedas, nor is he required to worship any demigods. Being a devotee, there's a station in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Devarsabhu Tapdhananam Pratinam, Nikinkuru Nayam Ranichrat, Saratmanaya Sarang Saranyam, Gatomu Kundam Parvita Kartam, that when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, he is no longer indebted to the Devarsi, to the rishis, to the demigod, Devarsi Bhutapta, to ordinary living entities, to forefathers, the Numpratinam. Why? Because he surrendered to that person whom everything is within. So if you surrender to that person, Krishna, then all other obligations are taken care of, no problem. Just like I know in India, there's big obligation to parents, whatever the parents say. You know, there's it's still there in America. Parents say something, we just do the opposite. Very rebellious, yeah, isn't it? In America, it's just like we're like that. It's just very rebellious. But in India, it's still like that, isn't it? The father says something, you do it. And he's like a guru. And even it's stated in Shastra that the disciple and the son, he follows, you know, does whatever he says, you do. But sometimes they become attracted to Krishna consciousness, and the father says, no, I don't think you should do this. And sorry, Dad, but Krishna's a higher father. You're my father, but Krishna, he's the supreme father. So they do what Krishna wants, and they join. But sometimes they wouldn't join because their father says, I think it's better not, you know, maybe later, not now. And he wouldn't join. So, but actually, yeah, Krishna's our real father. Pitaham asya jagato mata data pitama vedyam pavitam omkar rig yama samudra evacha. That Krishna, he is the father of everyone. Someone may be the father of one or two children, three children, but Krishna, he's everyone's. Pitaham asya jagato. He's not only the father, he's the mother. He's data, he's the maintainer. Everything is coming from Krishna. Pitama, he's the grandfather. Vedyam, he's the goal of the Vedas. Vanyam, pavitram, he is that which purifies. So just by hearing about Krishna, like this Govardhan Leela, this wonderful Leela, just by hearing this Leela, we get purified. All the Leela, any Leela we hear about Krishna, we get purified. Chanting his names, hearing his pastimes, we get purified. And this is the goal. So this hearing is so important. Pita hamasya jagato mata data pita vedyam pavitram omkara Brig Samayajar Avacha. This is a very important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. A pure devotee of Lord Krishna doesn't have to perform any of the ritualistic functions enjoined in the Vedas, nor is he required to worship any demigods. Being a devotee of Lord Krishna, one is understood to have performed all kinds of Vedic rituals and all kinds of worship to the demigods. One does not develop devotional service for Krishna by performing the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies or worshiping the demigods. But it should be understood that one who is engaged fully in the service of the Lord has already fulfilled all Vedic injunctions. In order to stop all such activities, by his devotees, Krishna wanted to firmly establish exclusive devotional service during his presence in Vrindavan. It's not that Krishna was on some ego trip, you know, he just wanted everybody to worship him, you know. Don't pay attention to anybody else, just worship me. He's not on an ego trip. But he knows that's the best for everybody else. And if we worship Krishna, Krishna's Atmaram, he self-says. He doesn't need anybody to worship him. But for our benefit, yeah, and the residents also in Vrindavan, for their benefit, he wanted them to worship him. Because he is the omniscient personality of Godhead, Krishna knew that the cowherd men were preparing for the Indra sacrifice. But as a matter of etiquette, he began to inquire with great honor and submission from elder personalities like Maharaj Nanda. Krishna asked his father, "My dear father, what is this arrangement going on for a great sacrifice? What is the result of such a sacrifice? And for whom is it meant? How is it performed? Will you kindly let me know? I am very eager to know this procedure. So please explain to me the purpose of this sacrifice." Upon this inquiry, his father, Nandamaras, remained silent, thinking that his young boy would not be able to understand the intricacies of performing the yajna. Krishna, however, persisted, "My dear father, for those who are liberal and saintly, there is no secrecy. They do not think anyone to be a friend, an enemy, or a neutral party, because they are always open to everyone, and even for those who are not so liberal, nothing should be kept secret from the family members and friends, although secrecy may be maintained for persons who are inimical. Therefore, you cannot keep any secrets from me. All persons are engaged in fruitive activities. Somehow, some know what these activities are and they know the result, and some execute activities without knowing the purpose or the result. A person who acts with full knowledge gets the full result." That's a powerful statement there. One who acts in full knowledge gets the full result. Sometimes people, they hear us chanting, "What are you doing? What is this?" Yeah. They don't have the knowledge. Just like I was speaking to some devotees about how a lot of people look upon us as kind of unusual. It's like the knee-jerk reaction. They see a Hare Krishna, "Wow, that's weird. You know, got a dhoti and curved a shaved head. It's kind of weird." But before I saw the devotees, I had read the Bhagavad Gita already, so I had some knowledge. So because I had read the Bhagavad Gita, I had some knowledge, everything else I just accepted. Everything. Shaved head, dhoti, kurta, deities, everything. If you have the knowledge. But if you don't have the knowledge, that's kind of unusual there. Isn't it? So the knowledge, therefore we have to get the knowledge out to the people. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "The only lack in society It's Krishna consciousness. You have to get this knowledge out. People are in such ignorance, you know, such abundant ignorance. Isn't it? So we have to get this knowledge out, knowledge of the truth. And then other things, not a difficult thing to accept. If you have the knowledge of the absolute truth. Okay. Oh, good. You're here just in time. Please, take over. Well, not a big deal. there. like in job party, they have enough for like, you know, 8 people to sit on there. Let's do it. Bring a chair over. Somebody's going to bring a chair over. How's that? Yeah. Oh. So I'm reading from the Krishna book. So I'll read a little more. Please, Prabhu. Come sit and we could read and talk. And, yeah. Today's the day. Today's the big day. So I just read a powerful statement that you could probably give many classes on. A person who acts with full knowledge gets the full result. Isn't that a powerful statement? One who acts without knowledge does not get such a perfect result. Therefore, please let me know. Krishna's talking to his father, trying to get him to explain why he's doing this yajna. Therefore, please let me know the purpose of the sacrifice you are going to perform. Is it according to Vedic injunction, or is it simply a popular ceremony? Kindly let me know in detail about the sacrifice. On hearing this inquiry from Krishna, Maharaj Nanda replied, "My dear boy, this ceremonial performance is more or less traditional, because rainfall is due to the mercy of King Indra, and the clouds are his representatives. And because water is so important for our living, we must show some gratitude to the controller of this rainfall, Maharaj Indra. We are arranging, therefore, to pacify King Indra because he has very kindly sent us clouds to pour down a sufficient quantity of rain for successful agricultural activities. Water is very important. Without rainfall, we cannot farm our produce grain, and without grain, we cannot live. Therefore, rain is necessary for successful religious ceremonies, economic development, and ultimately, liberation. So we should not give up this traditional ceremonial function. If one gives it up, being influenced by lust, greed, or fear, then it does not look very good for him." I'm just reading and commenting.
Gauranga. After hearing this, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the presence of his father and all the elder cowherd men of Vrindavan, spoke in such a way as to make the heavenly King Indra very angry. He suggested that they forego the sacrifice. His reasons for discouraging the sacrifice performed to please Indra were twofold. First, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, there is no need to worship the demigods for any material advancement. All results derived from worshiping the demigods are simply temporary, and only those who are less intelligent are interested in temporary results. Second, whatever temporary result one derives from worshiping the demigods is actually granted by the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is clearly stated in, like, you go into an office and you talk to the lower person and they say, "Well, I got to talk to the higher." Then you're thinking, "I should have just gone to the higher. Why am I wasting my time?" Right?
Yeah.
It is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mayaiva Vihitan Hitan, whatever benefit is supposed to be derived from the demigods is actually bestowed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot bestow any benefit upon others. But sometimes the demigods become puffed up by the influence of material nature, thinking themselves all in all. They forget the Supreme Personality of God. Thinking themselves all in all, they forget the... Bad editing here. Anyway, thinking of themselves all in all, they forget the Supreme Personality of God. No, maybe it is good editing. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is clearly stated that in this instance, Krishna wanted to make King Indra angry. Krishna's advent was specifically meant for the annihilation of the demons and protection of the devotees. King Indra was certainly a devotee, not a demon, but because he was puffed up, Krishna wanted to teach him a lesson. He first made Indra angry by stopping the Indra Puja, which had been arranged by the cowherd men in Vrindavan.
Question. He's a devotee, but he's puffed up.
Mm-hmm.
Devotees generally aren't.
It's an oxymoron, right?
Puffed up.
Well, we were discussing that the other day. I think one of the most interesting things about bhakti is it can be executed in the mode of ignorance or mode of passion, because, you know, you would think, well, if it's bhakti, it at least has to be sattvic as a foundation. And here in Bhagavatam, Krishna's saying, you're a devotee and you're proud and you think you're the best devotee, and then we understand that's Kanista. He doesn't understand the other devotees. So he's doing devotional service. He has some belief in Krishna, some faith. But there's this influence of tamagun. So it's mixed. So that's what's going on. And throughout the Bhagavatam, you always see if a devotee becomes proud, Krishna, an especially important devotee, he intervenes. Like with Brahma, he intervened, showed him the other Brahmas, and here with Indra. And then Indra, you know, he became humble. Brahma became humble. So Krishna's very concerned that his devotees don't become proud. And there's one talk, I guess it was a lecture, Prabhupada said, be careful, you're dealing with Krishna, don't become puffed up, and he was crying. He was basically begging us, don't become puffed up. Yeah.
You haven't opened the curtains yet.
Oh, we haven't had greeting of the
ease.
Oh, wow. Hold on, everyone, wherever you are. It's time for greeting. You had Guru Puja?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to have greeting of the deities. This temple is definitely following the Rag Marg platform. We just don't know when greeting's going to be. No. It's bhakti in the mode of spontaneous love.
Prabhupada said two things most important with deity worship.
Well, it's covered on puja, so it's allowed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, if you want it in next year, just put it on the schedule that greeting of the deities will be at this time. Then it's regulated. Then it's cool. Yeah. Right here.
Okay.
He made Indra angry by stopping the Indra Puja, which had been arranged by the cowherd men in Vrindavan. With this purpose in mind, Krishna began to talk as if he were an atheist supporting the philosophy of karma mimamsa. Advocates of this philosophy do not accept the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. They put forward the argument that if anyone works nicely, the result is sure to come. Their opinion is that even if there is a God who gives man the result of his fruitive activities, there's no need to worship him because unless man works, he cannot bestow any good result. In other words, Whether it's God or not, work produces a result. So it's just like a natural law. So you don't really need God to get a good result. You just do the right work, follow the right formula. You know, there's so many books, success formulas. There's nothing in the book about God, right? It's just, this is the formula. You do this, you get this result. That's called karma mimamsa. It's just your karma, right? But we see that it doesn't actually happen that way. Two people do the same thing, they don't always get the same result, right? They say that instead of worshiping a demigod or God, people should give attention to their own duties. Now, thus, the good result will surely come. Lord Krishna began to speak to his father according to these principles of karma mimamsa philosophy. My dear father, I don't think you need to worship any demigod for the successful performance of your agricultural activities. Every living being is born due to their past karma and leaves this life taking the results of his present karma. Everyone is born in different types of species of life according to his past activities, and he gets the next birth according to the activities of this life. Different grades of material happiness and distress, comforts and disadvantages of life, are different results of different kinds of activities from either the past or present. In other words, he's trying to push the whole God-demigod thing out. They really don't have anything to do with it. It's just your work. So, you know, we're going to try to figure out what's the best thing to do to get the best result, not that we have to worship a demigod. Maharaj Nanda and other elder members argued that without satisfying the predominant God, one cannot derive any good results simply by material activities. This is actually a fact. For example, it is sometimes found that in spite of first-class medical help and treatment by a first-class physician, a diseased person dies. It is concluded, therefore, that first-class medical treatment or the attempts of a first-class physician are not in themselves the cause for curing a patient. There must be the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kirtida went to Vrindavan to die, and she did Govardhan Prakram every day. She actually wanted to die, and she got better. She was really upset. She was upset. She went there to die. And she made no effort to cure herself. She just did Govardhan Prakrama. She thought, as long as I have strength, I'll do Govardhan Prakrama. And she got better. And she was so upset. Similarly, a father's and mother's taking care of their children is not the cause of the children's comfort. Sometimes it is found that in spite of all care by the parents, the children go bad or succumb to death. Therefore, material causes are not sufficient for results. There must be sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's in Bhagavad Gita, the five factors to action. So one is karma, and one is Krishna. So they work together. Nanda Maharaj therefore advocated that in order to get good results for agricultural activities, they must satisfy Indra, the superintending deity of the rain supply. Lord Krishna nullified this argument, saying that the demigods give results only to persons who have executed their prescribed duties. The demigods cannot give any good results to the person who has not executed the prescribed duties. Therefore, demigods are dependent on the execution of duties and are not absolute in awarding good results to anyone. So why should one care about them? So this is pure karma mimamsa. And one of the things I've noticed in my travels is there's, in Western countries, there's a greater tendency to take credit for achieving something. And in India, there's a greater tendency to give God credit. So sometimes you'll talk to someone who's very successful and you'll compliment them and they'll go, Bhagavan. They'll acknowledge, no, it's His grace, it's mercy. Every day when they open their shop, they'll do the puja. So like, it's not just like I have the good ads out there. The God's got to, you know, if you know the ads might work, but he's got to. I need his blessings. Or the blessings of the sadhus, or somebody's. They understand the concept of blessings. In India, you give a class, they'll line up around the block, can I have your blessings? That's just, you know, they understand that. Well, I mean, they take it sometimes to an extreme, because the other extreme is, all you need is blessings, you don't have to do anything. So, you know, there's the balance is in the middle. You need blessings and you need to do something. But they really understand that. And in America, it's more, you do it all. This is the formula, take responsibility, and this, read this book, it'll show you how to do it. So, yeah. And follow the example, the formulas, you know, that other people, how were you successful? You explain how you're successful. Somebody comes along and creates formulas or steps out of your success and writes a book. And then in the book it says you just follow these principles, you'll be successful. They're like, you know, psychological principles, so it is a science. But nobody says, but you need God's blessings for it to work, because not everyone becomes successful. Not even everyone can think like that. That's a whole other discussion. You know, Varnashram. They take a guy who's a Vaishya, he writes a book, this is how to become successful, and then a Brahmin reads it. And a Brahmin can't think like a Vaishya. So even though he reads the book, he can't do it. And they don't realize that. You know, different people have different natures. So, yeah, I read the book. How'd you like it? I didn't relate to it. You know, oh, this book saved my life. This is how I became successful. The different varna. So, you know, all the books are like Vaishya varna. What's wrong with you? That was the best book I ever read. What's wrong with me? I'm a Brahmin. I don't think like that. Krishna identified himself with the Vaishya community because Nanda Maharaj was protecting many cows and Krishna was taking care of them. He enumerated four kinds of business engagements for the Vaishya community, namely agriculture, trade, protection of cows, and banking. Although the Vaishyas can take to any of these occupations, the men of Vrindavan were engaged primarily in the protection of cows. And when Krishna created Vaishyas, he wasn't thinking of Wall Street and big investments in real estate moguls. That's not a Vaishya. Krishna further explained to his father, you have this contradiction. Oh, so-and-so is a Vaishya, you know, he runs a business. Yeah, and he's a meat eater. Vaishyas don't, they protect cows. So something's wrong with the picture here. Krishna further explained to his father, this cosmic manifestation is going on under the influence of the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. These three modes are the causes of creation, maintenance, and destruction. The cloud is caused by the action of the mode of passion. Therefore, it is the mode of passion which causes the rainfall. And after the rainfall, the living entities derive the result, success in agricultural work. What then has Indra to do with this affair? Even if you do not please Indra, what can he do? We do not derive any special benefit from Indra. Even if he is there, he pours water on the ocean, where there is no need of water. So he's pouring water on the ocean or on the land. It does not depend on our worshiping him. As far as we are concerned, we do not need to go to another city or village or foreign country. There are palatial buildings in the cities, but we are satisfied in this forest of Vrindavan. Our special relationship is with Govardhan Hill and Vrindavan Forest and nothing more. I therefore request you, Father, my dear Father, begin a sacrifice which will satisfy the local Brahmins in Govardhan Hill, and let us have nothing to do with Indra. It's kind of interesting because he's saying it depends on karma, and then he's saying the karma is to satisfy Govardhan Hill. So it almost goes in a circle, because now you want the blessings of Govardhan, right? Basically, let's worship Govardhan and Vrindavan. They give us everything. After hearing this statement by Krishna, Nanda Maharaj replied, my dear boy, Since you are asking, I shall arrange for a separate sacrifice for the local brahmanas and Govardhan Hill. But for the present, let me execute this sacrifice known as Indra Yajna. But Krishna replied, My dear father, don't delay. The sacrifice you propose for Govardhan and the local brahmanas will take much time. Better take the arrangement and paraphernalia you have already made for the Indra Yajna and immediately engage them to satisfy Govardhan Hill and the local Brahmins. What a slap in Indra's face, huh? I mean, it'd be one thing if you hadn't arranged it yet, but to take something meant for somebody else, wow. You're doing some Guru Puja and another Guru comes in and you just move everything to him, you know, and he's sitting on his seat. Maharaj Nanda finally relented. The coward men then inquired from Krishna how he wanted the yajna performed. And Krishna gave them the following directions. How old is Krishna in this? Who knows? I'm not sure. Janava, how old is he? Prepare very nice foods of all descriptions from the grain and ghee collected for the yajna. Prepare rice, dal, then halava, pakora, puri, and all kinds of milk preparations, such as sweet rice, rabri, sweet balls, sendas, rasgulla, and laddu. And invite the learned brahmanas who can chant the Vedic hymns and offer oblations to the fire. The brahmanas should be given all kinds of grain in charity. Then decorate all the cows and feed them well. In Vrindavan, when we do Gopuja, we feed them gore. And if you get there late, the cows won't even take it. They're so, they get so much. Yeah. They just like, get away. Yeah. After performing this, give money and charity to the Brahmins. As far as the lower animals are concerned, such as dogs and the lower grades of people, such as Chandalas, or the fifth class of men, who are considered untouchable, they also may be given sumptuous prasadam. After nice grasses have been given to the cows, the sacrifice known as Govardhan Puja may immediately begin. This sacrifice will very much satisfy me. Okay, so what's our philosophy? You satisfy Krishna, everything is good. If you do everything right and don't satisfy Krishna, everything's bad. Yes? But Krishna's not, he's not saying I'm God, so if you satisfy me, everything will be good. He's just saying it'll satisfy me, and Nanda's his father, and he wants to make him happy. But we know if you satisfy Krishna, everything is good. And you do everything perfectly and Krishna's not happy. You are a failure. In this statement, Lord Krishna practically describes the whole economy of the Vaishya community. In all communities in human society, including the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Chandalas, etc., and in the animal kingdom, including the cows, dogs, goats, etc., everyone has his part to play. Each is to work in cooperation for the total benefit of all society, which includes not only animate objects, but also inanimate objects like hills and land. The Vaishya community is specifically responsible for the economic improvement of the society by producing grain, by giving protection to the cows, by transporting food when needed, and by banking and finance. From this statement, we learn also that although the cats and dogs, which have now become so important, are not to be neglected, cow protection is actually more important than protection of cats and dogs. Want to make a t-shirt? Cow protection is more important than protections of cats and dogs. Another hint we get from this statement is that the chandalas, or the untouchables, are also not to be neglected by the higher classes and should be given necessary protection. Everyone is important, but some are directly responsible for the advancement of human society, and some are only indirectly responsible. However, when Krishna consciousness is there, then everyone's total benefit is taken care of. The sacrifice known as Gobhardhana Puja is observed in the Krishna consciousness movement. Lord Chaitanya has recommended that since Krishna is worshipable, so his land, Vrindavan and Govardhan Hill, is also worshipable. To confirm this statement, Lord Krishna said that Gobhardhan Puja is as good as worship of him. From that day, Govardhan Puja has been going on and is known as Anakuta. In all the temples of Vrindavan or outside of Vrindavan, huge quantities of food are prepared in this ceremony and are very sumptuously distributed to the general population. I thought people in India are starving. No. Nope. At least not today. Sometimes the food is thrown to the crowds and they enjoy collecting it off the ground. From this, we can understand that prasadam offered to Krishna never becomes polluted or contaminated, even if it is thrown on the ground. The people, therefore, collect and eat it with great satisfaction. The Supreme Personality of God, Hare Krishna. Okay. We're going to have some musical background to enhance the reading. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, thus advised the cowherd men to stop the Indra Yajna and begin the Govardhan Puja in order to chastise Indra, who was very much puffed up at being the supreme controller of the heavenly planets. The other day, maybe you know about this, it's very interesting, I was reminded that sometimes they do experiments to understand the psychology of people. And so they'll get students and say, you play this part, you play this part, you play this role. And so they'll always have a job and a supervisor. So in this experiment, they had two students who were assigned to a job and one was a supervisor. So he just sits there and tells them what to do, right? So what they do is they bring in cookies and they're viewing this. The students don't know that they're viewing what's happening. And in every instance, the supervisor eats more and makes a bigger mess than the workers. And they let him supervise for half an hour. And so the point is that as soon as you put someone in a position of power, they misuse it in some way. I mean, it's a subtle thing. Here's the, you know, we have six cookies or three of us. He'll eat three cookies. And there's always a bigger mess on the table where he eats than the workers. Because he's now a supervisor, so he thinks he has a right for more. And there are many experiments like this where actually sometimes they did a mock experiment where they put some students in prison and then one student was the guard. And the guards sometimes became obnoxious. You know, it's just a mock experiment. So it's when you get power, you know, they say within a half an hour, it's starting to go to your head. So, you know, after I heard that experiment, I was thinking, what to speak of Indra or Brahma? That's like, you know, we'll never have that much power. So it does go to their head sometimes. Yeah. The honest and simple cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, accepted Krishna's proposal and executed in detail everything he advised. They performed Govardhan worship and circumambulation of the hill. Following the inauguration of Govardhan Puja, people in Vrindavan still dressed nicely and assembled near Govardhan Hill to offer worship and circumambulate the hill, leading their cows all around. According to the instruction of Lord Krishna, Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men called in learned brahmanas and began to worship Govardhan Hill by chanting Vedic hymns and offering prasadam. The inhabitants... The inhabitants of Vrindavan assembled together, decorated their cows, and gave them grass. Keeping the cows in front, they began to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. The gopis dressed themselves very luxuriantly and sat in bull-driven carts, chanting the glories of Krishna's pastimes. The brahmanas assembled there to act as priests for Govardhan Puja, offering their blessings to the cowherd men and their wives, the gopis. When everything was complete, Krishna assumed a great transcendental form and declared to the inhabitants of Vrindavan that he was himself Govardhan Hill in order to convince the devotees that Govardhan Hill and Krishna himself are identical. Then Krishna began to eat all the food offered there. The identity of Krishna and Govardhan Hill is still honored, and great devotees take rocks from Govardhan Hill and worship them exactly as they worship the deity of Krishna in the temples. The followers of the Krishna consciousness movement may therefore collect small rocks or pebbles from Govardhan Hill and worship them at home, because this worship is as good as deity worship. The form of Krishna, who began to eat the offerings, was separately constituted, and Krishna himself, along with the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, offered obeisances to the deity as well as Govardhan Hill. So it wasn't that Krishna wasn't there as a little boy. He was still there as a little boy, and then he assumed Govardhan manifested this form. In offering obeisances to the huge form of Krishna and Govardhan Hill, Krishna declared, "Just see how Govardhan Hill has assumed this huge form and is favoring us by accepting all the offerings." In other words, Krishna is saying, "Well, look, I told you we should do this, and it's a success because Govardhan's accepting." Krishna also declared in that meeting, "One who neglects the worship of Govardhan Puja, as I am personally conducting it, will not be happy. There are many snakes on Govardhan Hill, and persons neglecting the prescribed duty of Govardhan Puja will be bitten by these snakes and must be killed." "In order to assure the good fortune of the cows and themselves, all people of Vrindavan near Govardhan must worship the hill as prescribed by me." Thus, performing the Govardhan Puja sacrifice, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan followed the instructions of Krishna, the son of Basudev, and afterwards they returned to their respective homes. Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. So, one of the wonderful things about Krishna consciousness is that because Krishna is so wonderful, whatever he does is worthy of turning into a festival. You know, just like little things he does are so amazing. So of course Krishna knows that when he does something wonderful, it's going to be recorded in the Bhagavatam. People will talk about it. They'll write songs about it. They'll write poems about it. They'll do paintings of it. And then maybe Krishna knew Bollywood would do movies of it also. I'm sure he did. So the purpose of Krishna's coming is so he can provide us with something to talk about, something to think about other than Maya. Because if he doesn't come, there's no Krishna, there's only Maya, right? So, you know, there's a lot to talk about in this world. And so Krishna comes to give us something else to talk about that'll liberate us. So the idea of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill was so special And this festival became so special and so dear to the devotees that it said, at least in Vrindavan, this festival is bigger than Janmashtami. It's celebrated more widely and more grandly than even Janmashtami. And today, there will be hundreds of thousands of people. Well, today there are hundreds of thousands of people doing Govardhan Parikrama. It's like a rock concert, like entrance into a rock concert. It's just, even to find a place, so crowded. So, many, many people who live in Delhi, for example, business people, and maybe who we wouldn't consider like practicing devotees, they'll come on Ekadasi with their families as a tradition. They'll go Govardhan Puja and then they'll go home. And so sometimes you go to Govardhan and you'll see little kids doing it with their parents and their grandparents. And you understand this is like going on in religious families. You know, so this Govardhan and this festival, Govardhan and the Govardhan Parikrama and the Govardhan Puja is ingrained in the hearts of Vaishnavas and in Hindus, and especially those who live fairly close to Vrindavan. So another purpose, as Prabhupada is explaining here, now that Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, all of Govardhan becomes a deity, and any stone from Govardhan you can put on your altar and worship it as Krishna. Govardhan is also a devotee of Krishna, so you can worship your deity as a devotee if you choose. Because Bhagavatam says he's the best devotee. Haridasya Varya. So you can worship either way. But here Prabhupada says it's Krishna. You can go to Govardhan and leave some gold there, or get permission from the sadhus at Govardhan and take a Govardhan Shila and worship it. Although I was thinking this morning, I don't know if you're aware, when Prabhupada created devotee communities like this, thank you, where everyone lives together, then he said that we should worship the deity here. He wasn't encouraging us to have deities at home, worship the deity here. And in those days, because there were so many devotees in the community, the temples had lots of deities. So everyone, you know, because they say, well, I want to worship the deity. I have a deity at home. You know, all right, we'll get more deities. So we'll put more deities on the altar. So many temples have many deities. And the original reason they had so many deities was to give an opportunity to all the Brahmins to do puja. So if you ever wonder, why does this temple have so many deities? Two sets of Gornitai, and two sets of Radha and Krishna, two sets of Jagannath, this and that. And so it's because one of the reasons was they were just giving opportunity to all the Brahmins. So Prabhupada encouraged, you know, do the puja in the temple, worship the deities in the temple. And of course, now many people live outside, so, you know, and devotees like to have deities in their home, of course. The position of Giriraj, it is said, we've been told, that he fulfills all of our desires. And when you do Govardhan Parikrama, it is said Giriraj follows you and he asks you, what do you want? And so as you're doing Govardhan Parikrama, you're thinking, Giriraj, this is what I want. You pray. So today's a nice day to ask Giriraj to fulfill your desires. It's a nice day to meditate on Giriraj. If you've been there, you can meditate on Giriraj in Vrindavan. And we can meditate also, as we're reading in this story, about the chastisement of Indra. And always remember that whenever we're given a little power, there's going to be a tendency to become proud. And Krishna doesn't like it, and he may come and humble us in embarrassing ways. And Krishna appreciates your humility. And Indra became, at least at that point, he became very humbled. Because he tried to destroy, I mean, it's amazing. He tried to destroy. He was so angry, he wanted to cause distress to the Vrajavasis. Because they didn't worship him. He was just so angry. I will destroy Vrindavan. That's amazing, isn't it? So, anyone want to make some comments, questions? You want to say something? That's a very good question. And just like sometimes we do something stupid, and then after we do it, we ask ourselves the same question. How did I do that? What happened? And Lord Indra is a little more attached to his position, to his opulence. And the more you're attached to something, the more angry you become when it's taken away. Right? You know, as Bhagavatam explains, Indra, he, somehow or other, he forgot Krishna's position. He said, like, who does Krishna think he is taking this away? I'll show him a thing or two. Because of his attachment, he became so angry. He just, you know, it's right in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Lust, anger, loss of intelligence, you know. So he's manifesting that verse. Kamesha Kodesha Rajagunsa Mudvava. Mahashano Mahadpadma, the greatly sinful enemy. And then from attachment, lust develops. From lust, lose your memory, anger comes, frustration, so... It just shows that even one is a devotee, sometimes that can happen. When you're too attached to your position or possessions, and they're taken away. You know, we see occasionally in our movement when something bad happens to a devotee, it tests their faith. Sometimes they lose faith or they become angry with Krishna. Why did you do that? I've been serving you every day. Why did you take that away? Which, if you're observing that, you'd think it's kind of strange. You're a devotee, you know. Now you're angry at Krishna. That doesn't make sense. But it happens because of our attachment. Yes? So Indra's a devotee, but he likes his position, and sometimes someone is a devotee and they also enjoy a position in this world, and they're, so it's mixed, and they're not that Krishna conscious that if they lose that position they're happy. Some devotees would be happy to lose their position, or at least equipoise during a situation like that. But Indra exemplifies a devotee, but someone who's a bit attached to his position, power, opulence, and so forth. And that's what happens when you lose it, even if you're a devotee. Right? I think one example it shows is that just because we're devotees, don't think we're immune from acting like ordinary people. Right? Potentially we can act that way if we're not situated properly. So even though one is a devotee, sometimes we see devotees get very upset, very angry, become very intolerant. We've seen it. So it's not just because I'm doing sadhana is not an inoculation, because attachment may be there in the heart. So until that attachment is purified, there's possibility that we would act like Indra. So I think it's just, you know, it's a good example, right? You can be a devotee, but you're still attached. You might become angry when you lose something, as did Indra. And you might act in the wrong way, as did Indra. So, right? We think, I chant Hare Krishna, then I don't have to do anything. No, if you're cultivating that weed in your heart, it'll come out. Sometimes it does. Like this example of power. Yeah, you're fine, you're doing devotional service, everything's fine. And then all of a sudden they give you a position, and then you start misusing it, for example. Or any of us may start misusing it. So, why? Because something's in there, it's not purified. So give it the right situation, it'll manifest, isn't it? You know, you ever been in a situation and something manifests and you thought, I thought I was over that. I thought that was like 10 years ago, and then it comes up again. It's because there was a catalyst, an environmental stimulus. And because the attachment's still there, then we interacted with that attachment and we did something stupid or said something stupid. Or thought something stupid. And that's why Prabhupada said, our disease, or one of the diseases of Americans, is we're not afraid of Maya, like we think. Been chanting for a few years, so no problem. So it's good. It shows what happens when you're attached. So we want to be detached from everything, from honor, from possessions, from position, sexual attractions, everything. Then it won't happen. Then it's taken away, you weren't attached. It doesn't matter. Right? You ever lose something that you weren't attached to? It's like, or whatever. I didn't need it anyway. But what if you lose something you're really attached to? Your whole day is ruined, isn't it? You can't even chant. You don't even want to chant, you're just too disturbed. So detachment is the inoculation against material miseries. And attachment is the cause of suffering. But this pastime is nice because Krishna wanted to teach something to Indra, but then Krishna thought, well, let's do some other things, you know. Let's make this a festival. Let's, you know, touch Giriraj, and we'll have Giriraj Shilas we can worship. We'll have, you know, we'll have big prasadam distribution every year now on this day, and, you know, so many things, you know, just, well, we have to get this, you know, let's do it in style. I have to chastise Indra, but let's get some side benefits, right? So that's Krishna. You know, I'm not just going to, like, chastise him. You know, let's make it big. So Krishna brought all those elements together. Is that okay? Yeah. So, you know, Prabhupada, when some devotees would say, I'm a devotee, and Prabhupada would say, no, we're not devotees, we're trying to be devotees. I think that actually answers the question better. Because there's always this question, well, how can devotees do this? You know, a devotee does something. And we say, devotees aren't supposed to do that. How can a devotee do that? Well, the best answer is, well, we're trying to be. I think this came up the other day in class. Well, it was actually a devotee. Oh, it came up this morning. Indra's a devotee. How could he have done this? If he's actually a devotee, he wouldn't have done that. So he's trying to be a devotee. Because everyone who joins ISKCON will see a devotee doing something, and they'll ask themselves that question, or will ask another devotee. He's a devotee, how could he do this? Devotees don't do that. Right? Yeah, he's trying to be a devotee. Trying to be a devotee means we're conditioned. Until we come to the stage of bhava or prema, even on bhava there's a little conditioning left. But let's say, for the sake of discussion, till we come to higher stages of bhakti, then there's going to be that, how could he do that? He's a devotee. No, the conditioning did it. The conditioning within him, he's trying to be a pure devotee, he's still conditioned. When there's no conditioning, you'll never ask the question, how could he do that? Because he's not going to do that anymore. But as long as the conditioning is there, he may do it if he doesn't control himself. And that's where the question comes from. How can he do it? Because he's trying to be a devotee. Still conditioned soul. Conditioned by something. Right? Even if you achieve ruchi, there's still some conditioning. Even asakti, there might be some conditioning. A little bit something. At bhava, prema, then he's not going to do that, generally. At bhava, you know, they say you can fall from bhava, but that's usually have to commit some aparad or something. You know that conversation. This man was talking about gurus, about bad gurus. And Prabhupada said, so what about the bad gurus? And Prabhupada said, well, if he's bad, how can he be a guru? Because there's no such thing as bad gurus. You know that conversation? If he's bad, you know, it's a paradox. So it's kind of like, you know, if he's a devotee, how can he do that? Bad devotee, you know, he's a bad devotee. You know. But, you know, we have a devotee in our community who just killed somebody. It's like, wait a minute, devotees don't kill people. Yeah, so there's a lot of this devotee just got arrested for stealing. Yeah. So why is he a devotee? Because Mahaprabhu was asked, what is a devotee? And he said, one who chants Hare Krishna is a devotee. So he believes in Krishna. He chants Hare Krishna. He's a devotee. Right? So that kind of devotee could end up in jail. Because in his former life, he was a thief. And he's still conditioned. So he ended up stealing. So that's why. So, you know, he's a conditioned devotee. He's trying to be a devotee. He's not yet a pure devotee. And he didn't control his conditioning. So, you know, we see attachment best in children. When they're attached to something, you take it away, they have tantrums. And adults are like that, but it's just more subtle. Isn't it? Sometimes you don't have an outward tantrum, you have an inward tantrum. Isn't it? And you get frustrated inside, and you're cursing everybody in your mind. And that's why we have inward tantrums. Because of attachment. Devotees in the three modes of nature. I'm a devotee, but I'm in the mode of ignorance. I'm a devotee because I believe in Krishna and I chant Hare Krishna. So I'm a devotee, but I'm in the mode of ignorance. Seems like a contradiction, right? How could you be in the mode of ignorance and be a devotee? Because you believe in Krishna, you chant Hare Krishna, but the rest of your life is pretty much tamagun. So your devotee side is like down on the scale. And your non-devotee side is up. That's all. And as you become Krishna conscious, it changes. So depending how conditioned you are and how much you work on your sadhana, then the balance will be more devotional or less devotional. Right? And we see that in our own heart. We have devotional thoughts and non-devotional thoughts. To the degree we're purified, more devotional thoughts. To the degree we're contaminated, more thoughts just like everyone else is having. You ever have thoughts and realize probably all the non-devotees are thinking like I'm thinking right now. Now, why am I thinking like this? I'm a devotee. Isn't it? Yeah. Because we said a class yesterday, Vijay Prabhu was quoting Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and Bhaktisiddhanta said the mind is a non-devotee. So that's why. Why am I thinking like that? Because my mind's still a non-devotee. If you ever wonder why you're thinking the way you're thinking, that's the answer. Because my mind's a non-devotee. I'm a devotee, why am I thinking like that? Because my mind's a non-devotee. That's why. So as long as the mind's a non-devotee, then we'll have the Indra syndrome. Do you have the Indra syndrome? If you do, we have the medicine. Trinadapi. Available now at your local pharmacy. Comes in pill form, liquid, or vapor. Yeah, garland form. It comes in the form of grass also and trees. Come get your blades of grass and keep them in your mouth. Put straw in your mouth. Somebody said, the straw is in your mouth, right? But the soul is in your heart, so you're lower than the straw. By putting in your mouth, you become lower than the straw. And in India, when someone has a straw, it means they're going around begging for forgiveness, that people know that. So come get your straw, the cure for the disease. The Indra syndrome. And that Indra syndrome is like, it's pervasive, right? Enjoy Hare Krishna. I want to enjoy Hare Krishna. I want to enjoy and I want to control everything and everybody, right? That's why I came in the material world. Isn't it? So you become a devotee. It's like you're on a racing bike, you know? You got this momentum. Enjoy, control, enjoy, control. And then you learn about the philosophy. And you know this enjoying, controlling is not working, but the momentum's there because you're always trying because you have no alternative. So you become a devotee and you realize, okay, this is it. But your bike is still, you know, your brakes aren't that good and your bike is still going. And so even after 40 years, the bike's still going. Maybe hopefully slower, but it's still going, isn't it? The Indra syndrome is still there. It's very subtle. It's still in our blood. We haven't got it all out. And so, we come to bhava, you know, hopefully it's been drained. And then prema is out fully. So just hang in there. That's why our shastras talk about tolerance. Actually, tolerance is so important. Bhaktisiddhanta said tolerance is our only friend in bhajan because we have to tolerate all that conditioning. Right? What do you do if it's there? Try to purify it. You chant, you pray, you hear, you associate, you worship the deity. You do all these things. And even sometimes after doing all these things, some trace of it's there. So therefore, tolerate. All you can do is tolerate it. Otherwise, you give into it. You know? And some devotees, they get frustrated. They see it and they go, I quit. I'm frustrated. You know, 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, whatever. These desires are still there. What's the use? They get frustrated. They give in. But Shastra says be tolerant and still be enthusiastic because that's how you'll achieve the goal. So I think for us, we just have to understand the trip is longer than we thought originally. You know, like we're driving to Austin, let's say, you know, what does it take, like 3 hours? Or someone tells you, oh yeah, Austin, you can get there in 2 hours. And after 2 hours, you're not in Austin. It's like, and now you're all frustrated, right? Because they told you 2 hours. If I told you, well, it's like 4 hours, then you'd get there in 3.5, and you go, wow, you'd be happy, right? Same thing. So, you know, if I tell you, you know, maybe when you're 89 and a half, you might get some ruchi, or maybe in the next life, then patience will be there. Tolerance will be greater. But if it's like, no, I thought I was going to get it in 2 years, and now it's 20 or 30 or 40, I still don't have it, you get frustrated. But the idea is, no, if you stay on the path, you'll get it. And what you'll get is so great, it's worth tolerating. Isn't it? It's like, it's worth tolerating all this other stuff if I can get this thing. So I'm willing to tolerate it because this thing is really valuable. At least that's how I see it, you know. All right, I have to tolerate. But why am I tolerating? Because I'm going to get the gold. So I'll tolerate it. Because the gold doesn't exist in the material world. It only exists in the spiritual world. And the only way I can get it is to tolerate what's going on here. So that thing is so valuable, it's better than anything I can get. Even to get something material, I'm going to have to tolerate so many inconveniences. So why not tolerate for Krishna? That's it. That's the process. So, you know, we're all a little bit like Indra, right? You might say, no, you know, I don't have my harem of dancing girls and my soma rasa or whatever he drinks or this or that. Yeah, we have it in our minds, though, don't we? I may not have my dancing harem, but I've got it in my mind, isn't it? So, you know, we're not that different, right? You know, I don't have it. Why? Because I can't get it. If I could get it, I'd get it, isn't it? If you were Indra, would you have a dancing harem? Of course. So I said, well, I'm very renounced. I don't have a dancing harem. Yeah, right. You couldn't get it if you tried. So you're a sadhu by default. You know? But that's the problem. If we could get it, we'd go for it. Right? So once we admit that, we're like, okay, I have to really be careful. I mean, you could ask any devotee, say, Prabhu, what is your weakness? That if Krishna just gave this thing to you, you'd be like butter on fire. You know, and everybody could tell you something. Yeah, well, if he gave me this, I don't know. It would be hard, you know, it would be hard. That's called conditioned soul. When we come to the point where, no, nothing. He could give me anything, I'm not interested. Then we won't have this discussion anymore. Then it's over. Then we're Takahari Das. Maya comes. You can come if you want to hear me chant. But other than that, I don't really need you. So, is that okay? Whether it's okay or not, it's the way it is. It's just how it is. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, go premanandi, hari hari bol.